Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time Podcast. On today's episode, we're discussing the Manchester Derby and the Norwegian freak, Erling Haaland.
There's never been a player that I've seen come to the Premier League and produce like this instantly.
Then we're looking over the North London Derby and why Arsenal will almost certainly win the league. I was genuinely so delighted and I really, really was impressed in the second half. We finish up with the burn book, what we hated and didn't hate this week. Mate, fuck Bake Off. It used to be good. It's not good anymore. Then over on the subscriber side, we've got questions on the most overhated players in football.
For an English player, he's probably had the harshest treatment since like Beckham in 98.
The players we ourselves hate for no reason whatsoever. I find him absolutely insufferable. He really annoys me. The way he plays things up for the cameras, the whining, it just pisses me off. The future of Arsenal's left-back spot, and then anything but football, also featuring your questions. Okay, welcome to the show. It's your host, Patrick Van Straten, and today, as always, third time, I'm joined by Pete Dorman. How are you, Pete?
I'm good. 3 for 3. The 100% record continues.
3 for 3.
I'm just wondering who you would ever actually replace me with if and when that came to it.
I've offered...
Who, other than me, who would be your ideal co-host out of interest?
Werner Herzog.
Who?
Werner Herzog, the German filmmaker and documentarian. He's just like, he's just a weird guy. Like, you know, whenever he's interviewed about anything, he's just like, I don't think that nature is a beautiful place. Like, you know, obviously failing that Olivia Dodd, who has a very similar vibe to a sort of 60-year-old Bavarian man. But she, I did say to her that we might be willing to have her back on at some point as a guest. Obviously not as a host.
Obviously not.
In an auxiliary role. But, and clearly we wouldn't pay her as well. So, maybe, you know what? Maybe let's just leave it.
I actually met up with her on Monday night and terrible, terrible chat. Awful chat. Yeah, I mean, you were invited, but I think you had other plans, which was a good idea.
Yeah, I can't do Monday nights. And to be honest with you, Olivia, she's approaching a birthday that I think means that I can't be friends with her anymore. Not that big a birthday. Well, she's closer to 30 than 25.
So are you like applying Leonardo DiCaprio rules to friendship?
Yeah. So my rules for temperature, my rules for Olivia Dodd, very similar. You know, anything over 25, I get worried.
Yeah.
That's my attitude. No, it's like, look, to be honest with you, I have no interest in people under 25 as well. But, you know, when you get to 28, you're in your late 20s. And it's just, I don't need to look in the face of the Grim Reaper. I don't need to be reminded of my own mortality. I've got a baby to do that. I don't need to get it from Olivia as well.
Similar sizes too.
Very similar sizes. But I would say Coco, more advanced. In many ways. But I think she's literally the most interesting person I've ever met. Like I say to her, I wonder if the conversations I have with her when I pick her up from nursery and like drive her home in her pram, I wonder if they sound cute or if they sound deranged. Because like the other day I was driving her along and I was saying to her, you're the only person who's never bored me in conversation. You're the only person in the world who's always interesting. And then I was like, it's that weird thing to say to a baby. But it's like, look, there are lots of people who haven't exactly bored me, but I'm always super interested in what my baby says. It's like she's the most interesting person in the world. You don't look very convinced.
I think that's beautiful and lovely. I just don't have much to add to it. It's just a lovely sentiment.
Thank you. I mean, it really comes down to how much you enjoy duck noises, and I do enjoy them, and her duck noise is excellent. Look. Well, what are we doing here? We're already getting off piste. We haven't even got like 5 minutes in. Oh my God. Okay, right. So let's start in the obvious place, which is with the Manchester Derby. I assume you're very excited to get into this, Pete Dorman, as a Manchester United fan, because City battered United 6-3 in a derby which, to be honest, looks a lot more respectable based on the final score than it actually was watching it live. I was quite disappointed that United got those consolation goals. Obviously, Anthony Screamer, a couple of late ones for Martial, which maybe took the gloss off the double hat-tricks for Haaland and Foden. But United, 4-0 down at half-time again, second time this season. And in the second half, they rallied a little bit, but it was as much City taking their foot off the gas as it was United coming back into it. Can you talk me through your experience of it? Because I had to text a United fan I know, are you okay, hun? Just because it made me laugh and because I think I haven't enjoyed United's pain enough.
For me, it was so bad that like it actually didn't even hurt. Like that's how much wow. it's hurt over the past 10 years that it's just I'm just numb to it now.
Okay,
it was fully expected. Like I had a mate going into it, he was like, "Oh, I think we can get a draw," and I was like, "Absolutely not. Erling Haaland is destroying us," and he did. Like, it's just another performance that United looked terrified in. They absolutely bottled it. Like, I think.
Do you think so?
I think so. So I think Ten Hag's come in and his short term plan is kind of like getting the squad on his side and bringing back like that intensity and passion and, you know, the kind of teams of, say, like Louis van Gaal criticized of, you know, just not having any passion, not wanting to play for the club, not wanting to play for the manager, et cetera, et cetera. Then you see images of Diogo Dalot celebrating, conceding a corner, you know, blocking across, conceding a corner, celebrates like he scored a goal. And then you see it all over Twitter being like, oh, I love the passion. And I'm not that into it, but I appreciate it. I'm like, I understand what you mean. The flip side of that is that crumbles very quickly. And that's like a house of cards, that kind of like passion and confidence in terms of how that team sets up. As in, they'll come out, they'll essentially, in the first 10 minutes, they'll make the other team be like, shit, right, these guys are on it today. If that doesn't work, doubt starts to go in. And then that slowly just crumbles, or in the case of the Manchester derby, very, very quickly crumbles. And I think as soon as, like, so who was it who got a yellow card in like the third minute? Malacia, I think, got a yellow card in the third or fourth minute, came in with a load of like aggression. That's fine, Manchester derby. Took down Grealish, who was phenomenal, by the way.
Yeah, really good.
He absolutely tore to shreds. Yeah, Malacia took him down, got a yellow, was then on, would have been on a yellow for 87 minutes, not including injury time, against Jack Grealish. And I was like, this isn't going to be a good day. And after that happened, United couldn't string two passes together. Nobody would, like, they were trying to play it out from the back, but nobody was confident enough to take that ball in like those kind of high pressure areas. So they ended up just kind of pumping it a bit long, and City just came in waves. And it wasn't a good day. I saw it happening a mile off. I didn't see Phil Foden getting a hat trick, but I definitely saw Erling Haaland getting at least two. And yeah, I think as good as, or not necessarily as good, but United's results before that were quite decent, at least in the league, not including the first two. But it all kind of seemed a bit too rosy, and that the issues that still remain hadn't necessarily been fixed. They just hadn't been exploited in those four games. Because, again, you don't lose 4-0 to Brentford or 4-0 down to Brentford at halftime, and are also 4-0 down to City at halftime without there being big issues.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this is not to put down, you know, United, like beating Liverpool, beating Arsenal, those are really good results. But the Liverpool game, United were good, but I still don't think they'd have won without Liverpool also being individually really, really bad across the board. And the Arsenal game, Arsenal played into their hands. You know, Arteta made some ludicrous tactical decisions, I think. Or, you know, there was this really high line, but it wasn't playing very well. Like, it was just so easy for United to get in behind. Well, you can kind of look at those situations and see how they ended up with results. but it was a little bit too... You're yet to see United really dominate a game, basically. You're yet to see a game where United just look comfortably the better side. You see exactly the football they're trying to play. They're really, like, on it and showing everybody, like, the kind of football that Ten Hag wants to play.
But I think that's going to take time.
Yeah, sure, definitely.
Because you can see the impact Ten Hag has had in terms of how United want to try and play.
Mm-hmm.
But because, again, he's had one transfer window and, you know, however many weeks training, a few months, right? United are setting up as a counter-attacking team now, particularly in big games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I think he feels that positions the team in its current state in its best position to get a result.
Sure.
But subsequently, they're not going to dominate those games because they're sitting back. Essentially, he's trying to compensate for defensive frailties by sitting in, being compact, and then using the kind of skill and pace we have up front when there's space to move into and go quick. And I think that for him at the minute, that's his short term. And it makes sense, but we're not going to play like Ten Hag's Ajax overnight.
But I just think he's stuck in this weird situation at the moment where he... I can't really blame him for this, and this is really just a feeling, but it feels like he's a bit overwhelmed and trying to work out what's gonna help the most. So you know, was it after the Brentford game where he insisted that the team ran like 13K or something, because that's how much more,
but 8.3 miles and he ran with them.
Yeah. And he ran it with them and you're like, okay, so it was like a disciplinarian thing, but also like we're in this together. And then, you know, leaving Ronaldo out, okay, one thing, and then saying like McTominay and Eriksen, well, we've been winning with them, so I'm gonna keep faith with them. I kind of get that as well. Like, I want to build this relationship with these players and show that if you're playing well, you get to keep your place. But not bringing Casemiro in for this game just seemed so insane. Like, there were things like that. And I mean, I can forgive bad tactical decisions. You know, they were man-to-man marking in midfield. And it just meant that City's defenders were able to kind of pull them around. And Cancelo and Akanji in particular had phenomenal games. I mean, I think they did half of City's ball winning between them, but also loads of progressive running. But I don't really blame them for getting pulled around by City and pulled apart by City, because City are going to do that to amazing teams this season, let alone, you know, a United team in transition. But not playing Casemiro in this game, not having a plan really for what was going to happen if they were pressed and they did have to go long, it just seemed like there were quite a lot of bad decisions here from Ten Hag, which concerned me a little bit.
Yes and no. I think currently with United, there are so many kind of plugs to fill that there is no way you're ever going to be able to set up and fill them all. You know, by the time you sort out X and Y, Z will have become an issue and all of this. And like, there's so many moving parts within that squad that a team like City, just who are, you know, essentially amazing across the board, or there's going to be a weakness somewhere that they'll exploit. You know, it looked like United came and set up with quite a high defensive line, I'm assuming to mean that Haaland's going to have to come deep and get the ball in defeat further away from the goal, which makes sense. But also, our two wing backs were on yellow cards within 10 minutes, and their City's wingers had a field day because they had all that space, and also they knew that one more bad tackle and United were down to 10 men. I think, Luke Shaw came on at halftime just to get one of those cards off the pitch.
Yeah, but I mean, even in midfield, it was just like McTominay won the ball a decent amount, and I don't think he got carded. But I still, you know, I was looking at it, and City attempted 16 dribbles and completed 13 of them. I think there were only two players on the pitch who didn't complete 100% of their dribbles for City. And that, to me, I just think, like, it's basically what it looked like, which is City were kind of doing whatever they wanted, didn't really have to deal with that much defensive traffic. I mean, Lisandro Martinez, he's aggressive. McTominay is aggressive. But the rest of the team is just barely there. Like, and Antony did some ball winning as well. But The other thing that really concerns me, and this is a side issue, but I feel like we're at the point where I'm quite worried about Jadon Sancho.
Oh, you think?
I mean, I've kept the faith for a long time. And earlier this year, I remember United fans saying he's playing his way back into form and he's had some good games, but the numbers have been bad for a while and the eye test isn't good either. I mean, he doesn't have the ability to go past players that he did have in Germany. And I don't know if that's a fitness thing or just the fact that there are more kind of physically dominant players, fast players, and that he can't get around them. But all his numbers are down. Chance creation is the lowest this season it's ever been. Shots, the lowest this season they've ever been. Progressive carries, dribbles, dribble success, pressing. Something else I looked at. Christ, I can't even remember. Just everything is down for Jadon Sancho across the board. And yes, he's 22. And yes, the team hasn't been good. But I also think when he was at his best in Germany, it was kind of like Jadon Sancho has the license to not do that much defending. He did the least defending in that side, really. And to lose the ball a bunch because he's trying things that if they come off are super valuable for us. So we let him do it. Well, now they've spent all this money on Antony, who kind of is a black hole. Like you put the ball into Antony and you see what comes out. Like it might be a goal. It might just be a shanked shot. It might be he just loses it. But he's a high usage player. You can't have that many of them in the side, which is one of the reasons that we don't see, you know, Bruno and Ronaldo and Antony all on the pitch at the same time. So if Sancho's not allowed to try those things, then I kind of wonder what the end goal is for him. Like, what is he expected to be? I don't know. I'm really worried about that.
Well, that's a bit depressing, isn't it?
Well, not for me, for you. It's very funny. From the point of view of I want to see him be a good player. He's a good player.
Yeah, I mean, I still have a lot of faith in him. I think he's a great player. I don't think you perform like he did in the Bundesliga and not without being a good player, right?
Sure.
Yes, he has struggled since he's come to United. Yes, he is currently following a long line of wide forward players who have come to United to ruin their careers. I'm hoping he's not the next. He started the season all right. You know, he scored his goal against Liverpool. He took that well.
Yeah, he did.
You know, I think he's got 2 or 3 goals this season already. I mean, maybe I'm just being a bit romantic.
His XG numbers are currently 0.3 per 90, which is the worst of his career. And it's the same as Kieran Trippier. It's the same as John Stones. It's the same as Jacob Ramsey. I mean, it's not like...
Yeah.
I just look at that stuff and I think, is this a guy playing his way into form? And also, I find it weird that with United, like, they always... The wide players they prefer are all just shot guys. Like, Rashford is a striker who plays on the wing, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's never been particularly creative. He's not really much of a dribbler. Antony, not much of a dribbler. He was a bit more creative in the Netherlands, but really, he's a shot guy. He takes a lot of shots from wide. Well, the guys who are really solid on the ball, who don't give it away a lot, who actually do have one-on-one ability and some creative ability, are Martial and Sancho. And maybe if Martial comes into the side, you have a vision of a more possession-orientated team, in which case Sancho's kind of solid passing might make him a more natural fit for it. But I constantly look at United and I think you want to build a possession team, but you just don't use or buy possession players, really. There's you know, Eriksen's playing right now because he's one of the very few players in the team who's just competent on the ball, who can retain possession, who doesn't immediately get pressed off it when he receives it on the half turn. It's just, you have to buy some people who can play the ball. I mean, it sounds stupid, it sounds basic, but I just don't understand what the plan is with these guys.
But also, at the same time, you say that Eriksen is in the team because of that, like, kind of possession, retention ability. I personally think Eriksen has been a great signing.
Yeah.
But I think he's actually one of the biggest issues we have at the minute.
Okay, go on. This is interesting.
He's not a defensive midfielder. So
No.
His deep line playmaking is amazing. Going forward in those deep roles, he's amazing. His defensive attributes, I don't think, are good enough to do, to suitably bubble wrap that defense.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And the issue is, essentially, the game plan seems to be that Eriksen plays as DM, and he's either phenomenal on the ball and helps create two or three goals, and we win 3-2, or like we saw on Sunday, he offers very little defensive, like, output protection for the defense. He was marking Haaland on that corner.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, yeah, though, he's a pretty tall guy. He's 6 foot, Christian Eriksen. But beyond that, if only United had bought one of the best defensive midfielders in the game.
Like, genuinely, this is the, but also, yeah, the thing is, right, Eriksen is going forward has been amazing, right?
Yeah.
He's genuinely really, really good. And like you say, he's good with ball retention. But I don't see where he fits in our team long term, because,
well, I don't see how he plays at the same time as Bruno. Exactly.
Yeah, you're not going to drop Bruno for him.
Yeah.
He's not a defensive midfielder by trade, because he actually doesn't offer enough defensively. Maybe he'd be fine in a team that had a really, really solid base. He'd be fine in a Liverpool or a City, because they actually fundamentally don't really need to offer a huge amount of defensive protection.
Yeah.
For their team. But United's biggest weakness is that kind of central role in the middle, the whole back four, but particularly that kind of centre back pairing always seems to be the biggest cause of issues for United.
Mm-hmm.
He offers very, very little in that defensive midfield role. So you're left with one like a McTominay or a Fred who are fine, but they're still limited at best in terms of the top level defensive midfielders in the world. They're limited in what they can do.
I think that's fair.
They can do a job. I think they're both Premier League players, but they're not a defensive midfielder of a Premier League winning side.
No, right? I think that's also fair.
So you're in this weird thing, whereas, like, if long term, what do you do with Eriksen? Is he happy to just play like backup to Bruno? I don't know. Where does Casemiro come in? When does he start actually starting? Because, again, he's a player that you look at and you're like, that's exactly what United need.
Mm-hmm.
Like a really, really stable base to that midfield that offers protection to the defence and is decent on the ball. He's not going to set the world alight, but again, he's more of a stopper, right?
Yeah.
Which is fundamentally what United need. But he's played what he started tonight. Obviously recording this on a Thursday night, so he started tonight as we scrape past a Cypriot juggernaut.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As good as Eriksen's been, I just don't see where he fits long term, and I'm seeing that as actually quite a big issue for United. Going forward,
I think it might help you if Martial comes back and plays up front for you. Because I think the problem is, if you want to get Eriksen and Bruno into the team, you kind of have to play a 4-3-3 where Bruno's the most advanced. It's kind of a 4-2-3-1 with Eriksen and Casemiro in midfield and Bruno as a 10, or a 4-3-3 with Casemiro behind Eriksen and Bruno. But the problem is then you need a centre forward. And if you play Ronaldo, then suddenly you've got Antony, Bruno, Ronaldo, and presumably Rashford, who are just all shot guys. Like, Bruno can create as well, don't get me wrong, but that is a really trigger happy front four. So I think if Martial comes in, you at least have somebody who can drop deep, link up play, and if Rashford goes through the middle, Martial can go out to the left kind of nicely. That to me is maybe the easiest fit. But then again, I think, well, actually, in an ideal world, what I want to do here is drop Antony and play Rashford and Sancho and Bruno with Martial. Like, to me, that's the most balanced, most talented front four. But Antony's not going to be dropped, which means that if Sancho's going to get the team, Rashford has to be. Like, it's this really difficult situation where you've got people who have such strong stylistic tendencies, or such strong kind of financial arguments for playing, that it immediately like creates an imbalance in the size. Yeah. And it's extreme. And I look at Ten Hag and I think, to be fair to him, this is almost impossible to navigate. Like, I think you just have to get through the season, not lose your job, and get another transfer window. And hopefully Ronaldo goes, because that needs to be done really at this point, and just start streamlining this team and start making it look, you know, like we look at Arteta. Arteta's getting a lot of praise right now. He's taken Arteta a lot of windows. Yeah. He's basically built his own 11. And you can understand why, because the team just wasn't set up. And I think maybe the squad he inherited was probably a bit more balanced in lots of ways than United's was for Ten Hag. So I look at that team and I think, like, man, even from like a kind of football manager point of view, this is a fucking nightmare to try and figure out how the pieces fit together. So I can't imagine what it's like when you're dealing with actual human beings in a dressing room.
Yeah.
By the way, what are you drinking, Pete?
I didn't have an awful lot of time to prepare before this, because, you know, full time job. We're finished work at 6:30 and. Yeah, but I've got two Hazy Janes, BrewDog.
Okay, nice.
But I've also got the remnants. There's a couple of glasses left of a Porter 6.
Oh, lovely.
Bottle of red wine, also known as tram wine, perhaps. Colloquially known as tram wine.
Okay.
Lovely Portuguese red.
Because you drink it. Do you say the tram?
Well, it's colloquially known as a tram wine.
Because you drink it on the tram?
No, because there's literally a tram on the label.
Okay, but that gives me a very clear idea of what they want from me.
What? Do you drink this wine on the tram?
Yeah. Is that not... Well, all alcoholic drinks are best enjoyed on public transport. Everyone knows that.
But it is a lovely bottle of red wine, so it would be a shame just to limit it to one vehicle.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I'm not saying you have to drink it on a tram. I'm just saying that, like, it's at its best.
Best enjoyed, like, it's best served.
Best enjoyed, yeah.
Yeah.
It adds something to it, you know? Actually, I've got some wine in the fridge, I need to remember. I'm drinking a Dr. Pepper and rum, because that's the mixer that I've got. And I actually love Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper and rum?
Dr. Pepper and rum. Yeah, because, you know, it's like cherry Coke, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy cherry Coke more than probably most. That just seems like a very sweet concoction, because spice rum kind of gives quite a sweetness to it already, right?
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, I don't necessarily mind that in a drink. I wouldn't say it's crazy sweet, but yeah, I guess that could be an issue. I don't really mind that stuff, you know? And look, the options are not drinking or drinking this. So this is what's happening.
The only reason I agreed to do this podcast was that it makes it socially acceptable for me to drink on a Thursday night in my office.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
From my point of view, it's just that I literally never see you. That's why I did this podcast with you.
But also, at the start of the podcast, you said that the only person you've ever met who hasn't bored you was your daughter. So, you know, pinch of salt, right?
Well, there's still a hierarchy.
Well, yeah, of course,
she's the
of
most
course.
Interesting person, then my wife, then others.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'd break that top 10, to be honest. Let's not pull at that thread.
Well, let's see how this episode goes. I mean, yeah.
should we move on to our
You're my first choice for the podcast, and not just because I thought you'd accept the lowest percentage of the Patreon revenue.
Yeah,
Probably for other reasons as well that I could think of. Yeah, I mean... Yeah,
should we move on to other, you know... very talented, attractive blonde man, otherwise known as Erling Haaland. I don't actually think he's attractive.
He's not attractive. Yeah, he's objectively not attractive.
Yeah. I started that sentence and didn't know where I was going.
He's got a quality.
Actually, interesting. Right. Just before we get on to this,
tall.
I would say he has good model qualities.
Yeah. So okay. I see that.
Good catwalk qualities, which. Generally, I don't find very attractive personally.
I see that.
I can understand why they've chosen him. They're very striking, tall, etc.
Yeah, so he's weird looking.
I can see him on a catwalk.
He's weird looking. Like, if you went on one of the more kind of slightly offbeat fashion websites, like if you went on Koz or you went on
Acne
Weekday.
Studios.
Yeah, and you saw him wearing like a wide-legged jean, then you'd be like, I see this. Also, because, Acne as well, you know, you're like Scandinavian. He's Scandinavian. Like, I totally see it. But, I mean, this guy, I think, if you're someone like Darwin Nunez right now, and everyone's on your back, the way that you can rebuild your reputation and potentially win player of the season is by the next time you play against Manchester City, you break Erling Haaland's leg. Because, honestly, like, it's one of those things where, like, I'm still enjoying it at the moment. I am still enjoying the fact that he just scores relentlessly. But I kind of see the point down the road where I'm going to start finding it boring.
it's just absolutely obscene. I think...
This is Usain Bolt shit.
Like, everybody, pretty much everybody other than, say, like, I know... Rory Jennings has been getting wrenched on social media this week because he said he wouldn't get 15 goals and he's got like what 11 and so 14 goals and
yeah, to be fair to Rory, I think he said 15 would be a very good season. So I think at this point we can agree that Haaland's having a very good season. That's fine.
Yeah, you the connotations of it, the intent where I felt were different. I think he said if he gets 15, it'll be a good season. Very, very negative usage terminology.
I see what you mean. It was phrased in a negative way, but I also think, you know, I do think that for a striker coming to the league, 15 is a good season. Like,
yeah,
I'm kind of okay with
that. I think everybody, or the vast majority of people, when Haaland signed for City, were like, yeah, he's going to do well. He's going to score goals. He's a proven goal scorer in the Champions League and in the Bundesliga. It's very unlikely that he'll, you know, really struggle in the Premier League. He's also got the attributes as well. He's tall, he's strong, he's fast. He fits into the Premier League quite well. I had no idea it would be this easy for him.
It's nuts.
He makes it look so easy. Watching it, like his movement in the box doesn't seem that spectacular. It's, you know, quite quiet, it's not even that big, but he's always there. He's always in the right position at the right time. And he's so big that he's so hard to handle.
And he just holds people off. Like, it's like watching like Jonah Lomu or something where it's just like arm goes out. You can't get near him. Like, I mean, I was watching earlier today the highlights from City beating Copenhagen. Yeah. Last night, and it was like, you know, the thing where people are like, oh, just watch Haaland, like when he doesn't have the ball, people love to say that shit, you know, like, oh, just watch the strikers when they don't have the ball, and you're like, nah, come on, I'm gonna watch the ball. But like, it's like a cat. But like, I did start watching him just to see what he did, because you see him grab people, push them, like run in between people, shove people out of the way. Like, it's fucking wild. Like, he is like fighting to score goals all the time. And it's interesting. Like, it reminds me of a thing Gary Lineker said once, where Gary Lineker was like, I think that I can make any striker in the world score more goals. Because he was like, I wasn't particularly fast, particularly strong, particularly skillful. But what I was good at was reading where the play was going to end up and gambling in the right way. And I think that I think he was talking about Rashford at the time. He was like, if you gave me 10 minutes with Rashford, I think I could give him some principles, which I think would make him score a couple more goals a season. Like, not a huge difference, but a couple more goals. Well, Haaland has all, like, he's very two-footed. He's obviously big and good in the air. He's extremely fast. He's extremely strong, but he also has all that stuff down. He has all the movement down, the little tricks, the feints, and more importantly, just like, he's constantly moving. He's constantly thinking, is the ball going to break there? Is it going to break there? And so many goals this season, yes, they've come because of his pace or because of his finishing, but a load of them have come as well, just because he's like, oh, I'll take a chance to see if the ball ends up there. And it does. Yeah. It does.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely fucking wild, man.
Yeah, but it looks so, the kind of aggression aside, it looks so effortless in terms of when he just kind of, he'll just float in the area in the box, or he'll just stop for a split second, let everybody go a bit, give him a bit of space, and then he'll explode into the space.
Yeah.
And it's genuinely seems as if it's like a children's rugby match, but there's that one kid who's like 2 stone heavier than everyone else. And no rugby is played because it's just you give the ball to that guy who is 6 inches and 2 stone heavier, and he just runs through everyone. It's kind of like that.
I just can't.
Or feels like that. It's obscene that we're actually talking about this in October. But I saw a tweet, I think, this week, and he's currently on track, if he maintains scoring at the rate he is, for something like 70 goals in the Premier League this season.
Yeah, he's on track to like get 20 more goals than Lionel Messi did in his best league campaign. Like, I mean, it's fucking... I wrote a video about this.
Yeah.
Actually, I've written 2 videos about Haaland. So I wrote one ages ago, which was about how he potentially fit at Man City. And I said, this guy... Okay, people are saying, like, can he do the possession football stuff? But fundamentally, he's going to score a ton of goals. And the only questions are, one, how is Pep going to use him? Is he going to try and make him more of a possession player? Or is he just going to say, I don't care, get in the box and score goals? And actually, it's been a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And two, what's his fitness situation? Because he missed a lot of the last couple of seasons. And really, I think when you're that big and that fast, you are operating right at the limit of what the human body is capable of. And you probably, when you get injured, are going to suffer pretty catastrophic injuries.
Your knees are going to go at one point, surely.
Yeah. Right. It wouldn't surprise me if at some point this season he gets a bad injury.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if in 5 years' time we talk about Erling Haaland as a guy who maybe makes 20 starts in a season and still is a contender for the top scorer in the league, but is somebody who has long-term fitness issues.
Yeah, it's like a proper like Icarus player, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the weird thing about Ronaldo, right? And actually Messi as well, but Ronaldo more because he's bigger and heavier, that he's stayed fit.
With the Messi and Ronaldo thing, I always said Messi would have a longer curve, like a shorter drop-off because of how he can adapt his game to play in other positions, and you know that he doesn't rely on one thing, and Ronaldo largely relies on his physicality.
Yeah,
and Ronaldo just proved me wrong.
He didn't, in the sense that I do think Messi is aging better. Like Messi this season looks like the best player in the world again. I mean, he looks
it wasn't so much that Messi would age better; it was that Ronaldo would age noticeably worse than he has.
Sure.
Was what I assumed, but he's just a freak, obviously.
And also it's difficult because, like, we are still quite early in working out what's possible in terms of lengthening players' careers. It's only in the last kind of 15, 20 years, really, that fitness in football has been taken that seriously. And so we don't really know whether it's going to be possible going forward to have players perform to this physical level into their mid-30s, or whether Ronaldo is just a true freak.
It's not even just fitness, though. It's like the sports science behind it and everything that entails.
Yeah.
It's genuinely mental what they like, how much the game's progressed in 15 years.
Yeah, but it is all new stuff. And I mean, I remember when I was younger finding it strange that I would quite often think, well, footballers are at their fastest, it seems, when they're kind of 22, 23, or maybe even younger. Whereas you look at the guys who are winning, who are setting world records in the 100, 200 meters, and they're much older than that. They're more like 28, 29, or early 30s. And I thought, well, why is it then that footballers slow down so much? And so I do think that there are maybe gains to be made there, though obviously, you know, different demands, different sports. But it'll be interesting to see whether post Ronaldo in 20 years time we're like, yeah, players stay good until they're 33, 34, or whether it is just like not sustainable. But I mean, the Haaland situation, it's just 3 hat tricks already this season. One more hat trick and it'll equal Mo Salah's record in this country. I mean, a couple more hat tricks and I think he'll go into the top 20. You just like, I just don't understand.
I think he's like 9 goals away from last year's Golden Boot tally already.
Jesus. Oh my God.
9 or 10. And there's what? There's 30 games left.
He's got 17 goal involvements in 8 league appearances. If he gets one more, he'll equal Mane, Saka and Sterling in the whole of last season. Who are some of the better wide forwards in the league.
What's interesting, or what I'm kind of finding hard to kind of wrap my head around, is that there's never been a player that I've seen or come to the Premier League and produce like this instantly, or even produce like this at any point, really. If you think about, like, what Ruud van Nistelrooy had a run of, what, he scored 10 games in a row. He scored two. He was one of the guys who scored two hat-tricks back-to-back, I think. Drogba two. No one like this. No one has done anything close to this.
Not like that. Salah did. Salah's the only one.
Do you think it's close?
Salah set the top scorer record in his first season.
Yeah, but that was across an entire season. Like, this is 8 games.
Sure, but I mean,
like, I think there's still a level above Salah. Yeah, so Salah did come and have an instant impact, yeah. And he scored, what, 30 goals that season?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot think of another player that actually genuinely comes close to what he's... And this is the thing, right? This could be 8 games and it could kind of settle, right? And it could kind of go back to a more normal...
Or he gets injured.
...human being, like less robotic, whatever. Or he gets injured. But maybe he continues and just destroys every record ever written and makes football really, really miserable for everybody who's not a City fan.
I mean, I don't necessarily mind it from the point of view of, I would like to see, after years of people saying Harry Kane's going to break all these records, it's kind of fun that Harry Kane's just like not the best striker in the league and Haaland is going to fucking destroy him. Like, I think that's really funny. I think it would be fun to have somebody break Shearer's record so that Shearer can shut up about his record. You know, I don't really mind. I suppose as well, it's partially that the players who I've loved in Premier League history, like their iconic status is not threatened by Haaland. Like Henri, for example, was just a much more complete player in every single way than Erling Haaland. So Haaland being the best goal scorer in Premier League history doesn't threaten Henri's status, you know? Whereas if your favourite player is Harry Kane, then I suppose it sucks to see Haaland just like blitz him. But I don't know. There's a part of me that wants to see just what he can do. I want him to stay fit, play every game and see what he can do.
Obviously, he plays for City, etc. But I'm with you on that. I'm interested to see just how good he can actually be.
All right.
Just how many goals he can score for fun.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, it's like he's already bored of scoring hat-tricks for City. I mean, and De Bruyne could... De Bruyne's got 8 assists in the league already. 5 of them have been for Haaland. I mean, it's like, what are we doing here? It's just... look, I think this is enough City talk. Should we move on to the North London derby?
Yes.
Okay, the North London derby, Arsenal beat Spurs 3-1 in, I thought, a pretty entertaining game, and one where both teams pretty much played as we thought they'd play going in. Arsenal dominated possession, 65% to 35%. They had 22 shots. Spurs only had 7 shots, but they were of a much higher quality. This was an interesting one. I was talking to some people at halftime in this game, and I said, I think Arsenal have been pretty bad. I think if Spurs could string a couple of passes together, if they'd had Kulusevski playing, then we potentially would have conceded 2 or 3 in the first half, because Spurs were hitting on the break and there were 2 or 3 times that their final pass was just so bad that it gave up the opportunity. And they were kind of lucky that just some Arsenal panic created the penalty in a situation where really there wasn't that much danger. Because when Partey scored to put Arsenal 1-0 up, given the way Spurs were playing, they... I don't know. I'm not going to say it was exactly against the run of play, because Arsenal were dominating territory. But I think Spurs could feel a little bit aggrieved going in level at half-time. I thought that it had been lucky. I thought that Arteta had shown, again, some of the kind of tactical naivety that he did at Old Trafford. I thought Son was having a really bad game, which was very fortunate for Arsenal. I was pretty underwhelmed, and then in the second half, it just all kind of came together. Like that Arsenal went up again 4 minutes into the second half through that Gabi Jesus goal. And at that point, instead of panicking the way they had after taking the lead in the first half, they were able to control the match. And shortly thereafter, Emerson got sent off, which pretty much closed out the match. So it was an interesting one. I think that people afterwards saying, well, this was like a signature performance and it really showed us how good Arsenal are. I think yes and no. It would have been interesting to see what happened if Arsenal went in behind at the break. But when you look at the stats at the end of it, you say, yeah, this is exactly what these two teams have been so far. And currently, I was looking at this, City are conceding the fewest shots in Europe, and second are Arsenal, then Barcelona. Those are the three teams conceding the fewest shots in Europe. Arsenal conceding like 7.2 shots a game at the moment. It's absolutely wild. But yeah, I don't know. I was very, very happy with the result. I was very, very happy with the second half. But I saw a lot of Arsenal fans crowing. I got some shit from some Arsenal fans I was talking to about saying I thought Conte was kind of schooling Arteta in the first half. But I stand by it. I think it was fortunate. And if it had gone the same way as our game against Man United, I wouldn't have been shocked.
But how much is it fortunate and how much is it the kind of cliche of a sign of a good team that even though you weren't playing well, you didn't let the game go away and then you still come out on top? You know what I mean? Those games that you maybe shouldn't have won, but you did win, generally sign of a good team.
Yeah, but I would, this is what I mean when I say it would have been interesting if we'd gone in a goal down. Because if we'd gone in a goal down, that would have felt, I think, quite fair on the run of play. And then it would have been an interesting question to say, can Arsenal break down this Conte team who do play very conservatively and hit on the break? Can Arsenal do it without giving up another goal?
That would have been. If you'd have been a goal down, Arteta would have been more aggressive.
Well, I don't know. It would have been interesting to see whether we could have balanced the need for aggression with not getting destroyed on the break. Whereas in this game, the fact that we went in level meant that we continued to play the way we want in the second half. We then scored pretty quickly. Then fairly soon after that, Emerson got sent off. Then 5 minutes after that, Xhaka scored the third, and then it was easy. So I'm not saying, I know what you mean. Like, and Arsenal have really fast defenders who are really good at recovering. That's very helpful. We've also got some set piece danger, but I guess I was like, I kind of thought I didn't really learn that much from this game. I thought, this is a game where things, it wasn't like everything went Arsenal's way, you know, like, and the Emerson foul, like it was a red card, but it wasn't like a generous decision for Arsenal or anything. Like it wasn't like everything went Arsenal's way, but on a different day, if things hadn't gone Arsenal's way, if Spurs had played the right passes on the break, if Partey's shot hadn't gone in from, you know, 25 yards out, how would this game have played out differently? Would we have been able to break them down? Would we have succumbed to the same kind of naive defensive play that we did at Old Trafford? That would have been interesting to me. And I'm not trying to be a downer about it. I was genuinely so delighted. Yeah. And I really, really was impressed in the second half. But I didn't really feel... A lot of people now were saying, oh, I wasn't sure Arsenal could do it against better opposition. And now they have. I was kind of like, I don't know about that.
Is it more that you think, yeah, obviously it's a good result for you guys, but you're thinking that it perhaps papers over some cracks that still exist?
I don't know if it papers over the cracks. I just think that the people saying, look, you know, you were doubting us and look at this result, you know, I think that maybe they're being a little bit hasty. I don't think they're necessarily cracks. I think giving up chances on the break to a Tottenham team coached by Antonio Conte is not that bad. Like, that happens. And I think it's a downside of the way Spurs play. Like, Spurs' idea at the moment, they're pretty one-dimensional. They're two-dimensional, let's say, because they really score from set pieces and counter-attacks. I was looking at this. They've got more goals from counter-attacks, set pieces, penalties, and own goals than they do from normal build-up play so far this season. And when you watch them, it's often 11 guys behind the ball. It's pretty miserable stuff, to be honest with you. And when you're saying, look, we're going to get 8 or 9 shots a game, well, they're getting more than that. They're getting like 15 shots a game. But we're going to get relatively few chances in a game, but the chances we get, we're going to hope are high quality. You run the risk that a team just pops one in against you from 25 yards and suddenly you're on the back foot. Like, I don't like that strategy for exactly that reason. But in this match, I thought some of the chances they created on the break, some of the kind of three-on-threes they had on another day, a couple of those would have ended up in really big chances for them. And
that
makes me think, are Arsenal learning? Did Arsenal learn from the United game? Will they have learned from this game? Or will Arteta say, well, we got the 3-1 win? I'm inclined to think that he'll learn from it, but it troubles me a little bit that I now love our defensive personnel. There's not an obvious weak link. And yet in this game, there were still lots of times where I thought, oh, I'm concerned here. And Arsenal playing Liverpool this weekend, if any team is going to string together those passes on the counter, it will be Liverpool. And then you can be in trouble.
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't matter how good your defense, how much faith you have in your defenders. Now, against good teams, they're still going to get chances. They're still going to score goals, right?
I know, but you don't want to give them more than you need to. Like there was one thing where the pass from Son really sent Richarlison wide, and I think that might have been the one that actually led to the penalty. But it was such an easy pass. It wasn't like a situation where you were like, you know what, if Trent plays this 40 yards and drops it on a dime, fair enough, we're going to concede. It was a situation where I was like, I could play that pass to Richarlison, and I don't know why Son had such a bad game. Like that, you don't want to be giving up those.
Yeah, no,
of course, good teams are going to create good chances. And like I say, you know, a Richarlison, Son, Kane front line is extremely dangerous. And the way they play out for the back, they know exactly where people are going to be. That's like the Conte thing. But
yeah, it's
I looked
like
at this
passing movement. It's like,
yeah, and yeah, he has his set patterns. But I looked at this and I thought, I'm very pleased. I think there was a lot to like about this performance. I also think there was still quite a bit to learn. And if Arsenal beat Liverpool this weekend, I wouldn't be terribly surprised. But if Arsenal came out and lost like 3-1, because Liverpool did string together those breaks, I also wouldn't be shocked by that.
So how good do you actually think Arsenal are? Like, where do you think you're going to finish?
I think right now, Arsenal should be... I suppose there's no real difference between finishing third or fourth, but I think third is probably roughly... Third is about par right now. Arsenal, I think, can hope for second, depending how long it takes Liverpool to get their shit together and depending on injuries they suffer. I think third, if you finish below that, given the way the season has started, you'd be a little bit disappointed because the team is playing super well, even though I actually think some members of the team are not playing terribly well. I don't think Ramsdale's been particularly good. I don't think Partey's been particularly good. And I still think the midfield's a little bit thin. I would like another midfielder in there. But I'd say second would be amazing. Second shouldn't be played down. It would be a pretty incredible result.
I think it'll be interesting because you've got Liverpool and City. Or do you have City coming up?
We do next month. Yeah.
And then Chelsea in November as well.
Yeah, it's a pretty packed November, I think.
You guys have played well, and I think largely you've deserved the points you've got, but it'll be interesting against better teams.
The Liverpool game will genuinely be really interesting.
You know, obviously United won, and then you beat Spurs. But you haven't played that many big teams. Any big teams, really?
No. I think, you know, there are games in there that are clear indicators of progress. So like Palace away, day one. You know, we lost their 3-0 last season. We won 2-0 this time. It wasn't a particularly easy game, but it wasn't an undeserved victory. You know, that's good stuff. But I think it's been a pretty easy schedule to date. I think Tottenham have had an easy schedule as well. But like, if Arsenal now can go the Liverpool game, if Arsenal beat Liverpool, it would be the first time we've beaten them in a long, long time. I think like potentially it would potentially be the first time we've beaten them in the league in like 7 years, something like that. like crazy stuff. So that would be like a real boost for this young team if we could do that. And just going toe-to-toe with Liverpool, going toe-to-toe with Chelsea would be good stuff, because frankly, over the last few years, I've understood why we've had to do it, but it is a bit depressing to know that, like, when we're going to play Liverpool, we are essentially just going to play like we're minnows and they're a big team, even if we're in our own stadium. That is a bit demoralizing. It's nice to feel like maybe we won't do that this time. I just hope that we're not silly about it.
Yeah, I think the next 4 or 5 weeks, you'll find out a lot more about what the squad actually is and how good it is or how good it can be.
Yeah, but I mean, it's good. All I said was, what I've said before a million times is I want us to play good football. I want to have a feeling that this team is an Arsenal team. And once again, I feel like we are playing Arsenal football. I love the youth of this 11. I also think Saka hasn't quite hit top form this season. So this idea that we're playing absolutely at the peak of our abilities, I don't think is quite true. And there's obviously a lot more to come from guys like Martinelli and Saliba, who both look really, really impressive. And are kids. You know, they're a bunch of 21-year-olds in this 11. So, all right, should we move on? Should we move on? Because this is enough. Yeah. This is enough. I'm not used to feeling this happy about Arsenal. Yeah. The Burn Book is our recurring segment on this show where Pete and I do our favourite thing and talk about what we hated this week and also try and find things that we didn't hate. You put one thing in the Burn Book, a thing you despised. You take one thing out, a thing that, weirdly enough, you didn't despise. Pete, what have you got this week? You can start with either one.
Okay, so I'm going to start with something that I hate.
Okay.
So this week, I'm going to bring to the Burn Book lifts.
Right? Lifts?
But not elevators. The ones that go in your shoe.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, over the past like 3 or 4 weeks, my social media has been very targeted with similar products. Either in like sponsored ads, or those kind of like pseudo ads where someone showed, like a TikTok is like, oh, this life hack give me 4 more inches to my height, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? And I'm trying not to take it personally, but also I don't really care because I'm a very happy 5'8", maybe 5'9" on a good day, depending.
Yeah.
I don't feel the need to slip these little wedges inside my shoe to make myself, you know, a couple of inches taller.
Oh,
and I just hate the fact that some men feel the need to do that. I know if somebody does that and feels more confident, fair play, I'm not going to criticize that. You do what you want. But the fact that they feel the need to, I think, is ridiculous. And the fact that they exist is ridiculous. If you're short, just own it. Just own it.
I agree.
Because it's like, just own it.
But this feels like one of the areas, and I'm sure we'll get to it, but this is like one of the areas that body positivity has left behind. Like, male height is still not quite up there. And I understand why body positivity is like focused on female bodies. Like, that makes perfect sense. But like, male height, it's interesting how there are probably quite a lot of people who would think it was like totally out of bounds to like criticize a woman for her weight, but would be totally fine like criticizing a man for his height. I mean, weirdly though, I'm like, I think I'm between 5'7 and 5'8, so I say I'm 5'7 because it's better to be pleasantly surprised than unpleasantly surprised. But I've got to say, my height has never bothered me. Has your height ever bothered you? No, I don't give two shits about my height.
I would say that if offered, could I be taller, I wouldn't say, I probably wouldn't say no.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I've never felt the need to take measures to either A, appear taller or get taller. I mean, the latter is quite difficult because I'm not 7 years old.
Sure.
But yeah, I've never felt so insecure about it. I've never felt insecure about it, but I've never felt so insecure about it that I felt the need to try and do something about it.
Yeah. If I could change like 5 things about my body, my height wouldn't even factor into it.
Yeah. But also, so we're both, you know, on the smaller end yeah. of men, I would
below
say.
Below average in yeah. height, not in anything else, obviously.
Definitely below average in chat. but I think the stress of having lifts in your shoes would, for me, outweigh the 2-inch gain that it gives me aesthetically. Because,
okay,
one, surely they can't be that comfortable. Right. Two, imagine you went somewhere, you went round to your friend's house, or, you know, you go out to one of your partner's friend's house. You don't really know them. You turn up at the door and they're like, oh, we're a shoes off house.
Oh, shit. Yeah, the shame.
Shafted, right? All of a sudden, you've gone from 6 foot to 5'9".
Or people, you go on
people are going to ask questions, right?
You go on a date and, like, you know, a first date, and then, like, yeah. you go home with them. You take your little shoes off. Yeah. Can lifts give you 3 inches? Surely not.
I don't know how much they can give you, but I imagine at least 1.5 God to damn. Two.
Sure, 1.5 I could see. Three, but I suppose if you wear like a 1.5 tops, and a, yeah. yeah, and like a chunky heel, yeah, fair.
If you have but also if you have high tops, nobody will actually know where your ankle and shoe sits, really, right?
Sure.
It's easier to see.
Or just a heeled boot.
Yeah, yeah. It's essentially, I think, the ankle position's a giveaway.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't see the ankle.
No one's inspecting.
Yeah, but this is the thing. They will inspect when you take them off. And all
yeah,
of
when you take them off, they're going to be like, what's going on here? Yeah. Oh, that's bleak stuff. Okay, so, yeah. I don't know why you do anything that would potentially... It's like showing someone what you're insecure about.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that?
But it's... And also part of the reason that I want to put it in the burn book is that it's been aggressively served to me. I've obviously hit some form of algorithm.
Yeah.
That I keep getting served this type of content on social media.
What? How would it know that you...
Honestly, I have no idea. Like, but also, I think... I'm not in any way precious about my digital footprint.
Sure. Me neither.
You know, cookies, all that, just accept it, all that stuff. So many people will probably have quite a lot of information about me in terms of marketing information.
I think you need to caption your next Instagram post something like, as a 6'4" man. And then like all the companies aggregating this data will be like,
I reckon they've got it from like a clothes website that when you go in their size charts, they ask you the information about like your weight and your height.
And you're like, I'm very petite.
And then they'll be, oh, your best fit is this size. I reckon that's the only way they can get certain information like that.
I hate that shit, man. I hate it when it's when I'm like, I click on size chart and it just starts like asking me like, how tall are you? How old are you? Do you have a rounder stomach or a flatter stomach? And I'm like, some of it, I'm literally like, I don't know how broad my chest is relative to other people.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would assess that. Like, it's actually quite a hard thing to guess from just standing next to people in clothes. But anyway, I agree. I think that's dog shit. Get that in the burn book. My entry in the burn book. I've had enough of the Great British Bake Off.
Ooh.
I think it's wank now. I think it's so bad. It's lost whatever charm it has. And I think that's partially that in the old days, you had Mel and Sue presenting it. You had Mary Berry, who I don't like love, but she's fine. And now they've got Prue Leith, who I think is notably cold. I think she is like quite... And you know why? Because she's a Southern African. Coming from a family of Southern Africans, like, I could tell you, not always the friendliest, but she's like quite icy. Poor Hollywood obviously comes off like a major prick. And I think like Noel Fielding and Matt Lucas seem like nice guys, but the comedy they do is so like cringingly terrible on that show that I just can't really enjoy it anymore. And that's before we get to the fact that they had a Mexican week. Which I was like, I'm not going to get all bleeding heart about it, but I was just like, this is pretty fucking offensive. Like, yeah, they were like, right, we're going to make tacos. And then they said, oh, we're going to cook steak. And we also want you to serve it with a tangy guacamole and spicy refried beans. And I was like, A, refried beans. Look, okay, I'm not a big believer in like food traditionalism. I think if you want to put like frijoles on your taco, go for it. However, frijoles are not spicy. They just aren't. That is not how they work. Guacamole, tangy. I suppose you could argue this, but not really. There was also then the fact that literally nobody on the show could pronounce pico de gallo. Nobody on the show could pronounce guacamole, which you're like, we already, like, guacamole is already an anglicized way of saying it. It's not correct. But anyway, I was just like, it's like they picked a country and they were like, the food they make in that country, I learned about from old El Paso labels. We're going to make them make that. They could have just Googled, like, what do people bake in Mexico? And they'd have found out that there's, like, a massive tradition of sweet breads baked in Mexico. There are all sorts of, like, they could have just baked rolls. They could have done, like, bolillos. They could have done, like, they could have done any kind of, like, pan dulce. Like, there's just a whole tradition of baking there. And I just thought, coupled with the fact that I think the charm of the show has gone, it just pissed me off sufficiently that I was like, why am I watching this fucking show? Like, what am I actually learning about this show? And every year I look at them as well and I'm like, it's like when the Tories nominate a new leader and I'm like, this person's going to be prime minister. I look at them and I'm like, these guys are all lightweights. Nobody here is a serious person. And so I look at the first round, I look at all the bakers and I thought, firstly, none of you are hot. What's going on with that? There should be at least one hot one. Bring back Manon. The hot French girl from a few seasons ago.
Yeah, yeah.
What are they doing?
Candice too, a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah, they've had a. Candice kind of had a saucy quality. Is she the one I'm thinking of? She was flirting with Hollywood the whole time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, right. I get what they're that. I thought Ruby had a look. There are loads of them, but this season I was like, nobody's hot. I don't look at any of these people and I think, yeah, you're gonna have your own cooking show on TV. I just look at them all and I think, yeah, you're just a bunch. You're just a bunch of mole people who want to show that you can bake, and I'm sure you're fine, but it doesn't grab me anymore. So yeah, I think I'm out on the Great British Bake Off. And oh no, it's all Americans watching it now. I go on Twitter; it's just Americans talking about it.
The British baking show, I think they call it.
Why do they call it that? Because in my mind, Bake Off is it's not an English phrase. I think that's a phrase. Right? Is that, yeah, but Bake Off, that idea of something off. I think of that as something that was actually more likely imported from the US than came from Britain. But in the US, they're like, no, it's the Great British Baking Show, which is like it's like an audio description for the hearing impaired. It's like, it's so basic as to have completely zero character. So when I go on there and I see Americans being like, actually, meh, 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 and I just think, oh, fuck off. I've got nothing against Americans, but when Americans start commentating on the culture of countries which are not theirs, they rapidly look really stupid, the same way Brits do. And I just think they should maybe not.
I mean, we're still watching the Bake Off. I think we're a couple of episodes, one or two episodes behind. We're not racing to watch more of it, if you know what I mean. We're still going to watch it. We're less, I suppose, enthused to watch it, which I suppose is a sign of decline. One that I actually hadn't realized. But we did flag issues with Bread Week when we're pretty sure that there was one bread, one pastry, and a pizza.
I don't remember that. What was the pastry?
The technical was like this flaky style bread pastry thing.
Yeah,
it was a pizza. Oh, God. The thing is, Bread Week for me used to be the absolute pinnacle of Bake Off.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that guy who made a lion in a showstopper?
Yeah, that was sick. And also, you're like, bread, like, I understand.
There's so much different types of bread. Like, you can do so much with Bread Week. Like, there's so much fucking bread.
And sometimes as well, they have people on the show and you're like, you have a massive advantage in this challenge if you just happen to have eaten this bread, this particular dish before.
Or if you're from the country that this is from.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Whereas with bread, I was like, all of you should be able to make bread. You should all be able to make bread. This is a genuine test of your ability to bake. good. But let's just make everyone. Yeah. They should do that. They should say, right, you're making croissant in like a pastry week. You're making bread, you know, literally just like a crusty farmhouse loaf in this one. Like, make them do these different things to see how actually good they are at the basics before being like, can you make this weird fucking bread that we like found in a kind of isolated village in like Svalbard? Like, no, just ask people to bake normally.
Bread week usually absolutely slaps, and I was disappointed.
Mate, fuck Bake Off. It used to be good. It's not good anymore. Anyway, what are you taking out of the burn book?
I actually struggled this week for some specific tangential thing to take out.
Okay.
But so this one's a bit more of a stretch, but what I'm going to take out, not that it ever would be in, would be how nice it is to have some peace and quiet when you're in a long-term relationship. Right. And I was thinking about this today to put it in, and I kind of only put it in because
I don't
have anything else to put in. But I am aware that of the three burn book sections we've done, things suggest us as have featured heavily.
Sure.
And this kind of feels like an extension of that. But
let's take misogyny out of the burn book, eh, Pete?
She's currently away on a shoot in Liverpool, but she had to travel up two nights ago because of the trip, okay, like yesterday. And the house is just, it's just nice to have some time when you're in. when you live with someone in a long-term relationship, they're always there. She will also say this, so I play hockey every weekend, right? So I'm gone for most Saturdays, Saturday. And she has also said, like, she enjoys me leaving the house to go play hockey because it means that she has, like, time to herself.
And I get that. Time to yourself is good. Right, this is time to miss them as well is nice.
I mean, she's only away for 2 days, right? Two evenings. But, yeah, so I was just like, yeah, it's just you get ideas about what you're going to do, being like, oh, my play PlayStation, haven't done that in a while. I mean, and I didn't do any of them.
No, of course not.
It was nice to have the kind of the idea, at least.
You just spend the whole time like cycling through Netflix looking for something to watch? Because I'm just like, everything I'm watching with Emma. I've got nothing to watch.
Well, this is the thing. I was talking to people at work yesterday and they're like, oh, what are you doing tonight? And I was like, oh, I don't know, probably just stay and watch some TV. And they were like, I'm watching this and this at the minute. And I'm like, yeah, me too, but I can't watch that tonight because I'm watching them all with Jess. So we have to find some other program that we, as a collective, deem not good enough to watch.
Yes.
To then watch on my own and then be like, okay, great, 6 out of 10.
Yeah, you like, have to pick
only
a show
ever be a 6 out of 10.
You have to pick a show she's not going to be bothered about. It's difficult.
Oh, there is actually one called Invincible on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Quite good. It's like a very comic based animation show. But like the animation is very, very similar to genuine like graphic novels.
Okay.
Very, very highly rated on IMDb. And hour long episodes. It seems the more graphic novel end of comic books, which isn't something that I'm overly well versed in. But it's good. It's worth a watch. So yeah, this week I am very thankful just to have a night or two peace and quiet.
Does Jess listen to this?
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
Yeah, so does Emma. I have to be careful. Okay. What am I taking out of the burn book? Again, not that it would ever be in there, but my baby in the last week has started walking properly. And she's always been a talker, but her talking has really taken off. And it's pretty magical. So now, if you ask her if she wants to dance or sing, she will dance and sing. She will repeat pretty much every word. She can count to three in a kind of fake way. Like, she obviously doesn't understand the numbers exactly. But if you say one, she will say two, three. Okay. Like that. Right. It's pretty cute. And if she sees the number three, she says three.
Okay, so she does understand the numbers then.
Yeah, and she's got probably about 60 words now. And she learns new ones every day. She's got a lot of animal noises. My favorite animal noises that she does, I ask her what noise a frog makes, and she says, ba-bet, ba-bet, which is pretty cute. And her duck noise, her little tongue hovers in the middle of her mouth, and she goes, it's pretty amazing. And now that she walks, if I crouch down and hold my arms out to her, and I say, can I have a cuddle? She runs over to me and gives me a cuddle, and it is...
sick.
It's literally the best thing that's ever happened to me. It's so magical. I am... honestly, it's so great. I can't tell you how wonderful it is having a little girl who's so funny and so weird as well.
Yeah.
Because she is just kind of an odd child. But she's got a really good sense of humor. You know, like, she plays hide and seek with me, and she just... I know that it's just like soft dad shit, but it's so much... I always wanted to be a dad, but it's actually so, so much better than I thought it would be. It's so good.
Yeah, I think soft dad shit seems entirely unavoidable. One of my best mates had a baby like this morning, like just after midnight.
Oh, wow.
And he texted into our friendship group. So we have a friendship group of like me, another guy, and then the other halves. So uh-huh. their wives and Jess. But the message was quite like soppy. It's like quite like soppy. And he's not that bloke. He's not that guy. And like I read it, and it, like, the entire message was just like, I don't know, it just didn't seem like it was written by him.
Mm.
But it was about his 13 or old baby.
Yeah. It's only gonna get worse. It's only gonna get worse, like, cause they you know, I went to a boys' school. I'd say that between about 2000, which is when I started secondary school, and probably 2011 when I left uni, I'd say I probably cried total 4 or 5 times, maybe. Certainly you could count on the fingers of one hand the number of times I cried. And I didn't really like that. I've spent quite a long time trying to reconnect to it, because it wasn't like I didn't want to. I think it was just kind of like you couldn't. It was off the cards in the last year, and I think this is partially also down to sleep deprivation. But in the last year, that has skyrocketed. They've probably tripled that in the last year, which feels insane. It feels like losing your mind to cry that much if you haven't done it for a while. But it's really nice. It gives you access to a part of yourself that you always hoped was there, but you weren't entirely sure about. And I highly recommend having a baby. I highly recommend having a daughter. I highly recommend having my daughter. Being a dad, man, it's pretty great. Pretty great. I think that brings it to an end. Let's end there. This is some soft shit.
That was quite a nice ending.
But this is garbage, man. Like,
how long have we gone on?
Like an hour 20, and we've still got another episode to record on the subscriber only side. So make sure, if you have not subscribed to our Patreon, head to patreon.com/PatrickVS and subscribe for $6 a month. You're going to get extra episodes of the podcast. You also get to submit questions for the podcast. There are occasional Q&As on Instagram. There might be occasional written articles, though they're on a bit of a hiatus at the moment just because we've been focusing on the pod. But anyway, please do go and subscribe, because we really appreciate your support, and everybody who's subscribed so far, you guys are making a huge difference. And I've got to say, the podcast success so far has been bananas. Episode 1, we're over 2,000 listens. Episode 2, we're over 1,500. I realize that it's hard to ballpark how good those numbers are, but it's kind of amazing that there are so many of you out there who are listening to us. So thank you very much for your support. And send this one to anyone you know who likes football. We'll see you over on the subscription side. Thanks very much for listening. Bye.